You're listening to the Man Project Podcast with your host, Ted Rice.
Would you like to be bigger, leaner, and stronger?
Do you want to develop the confidence to go after what you want in life? Or how about becoming the man that women want to be with?
We're here twice a week to empower you to reach your full potential
so you can live life on your own terms. Subscribe to our podcast or download our free app in the iTunes Store
or Google Play.
Find it all at manprojectpodcast.com. Now, back to the show.
Get ready to hear an extraordinary story with our guest today, Tom Terwilliger. Tom is a best-selling author, an international speaker, and former Mr. America. And he spent the past 30 years practicing, advocating, and preaching the benefits of exercise and performance living. Tom has worked with celebrities like Eddie Murphy, Regis Philbin, and Cindy Crawford. He also used to host Muscle Sport USA on the Fox Network and even won the prestigious Telly Award in 2001. Pretty awesome, right? And Tom is an amazing guy, an inspirational person, and a hell of a man. But what really got me interested in his story is not just all those achievements he made, but it was where he came from. So Tom grew up in a pretty tough environment and ended up in an outlaw biker gang of all things, Sons of Anarchy style. So while his achievements are impressive, what's even more incredible is hearing the story of how Tom got caught up with the wrong group of people, with criminals, with organized crime, and how getting out of that situation nearly cost him his life. So get ready to hear one of the most inspirational and wildest stories you've ever heard with Tom Terwilliger. Tom Terwilliger, thanks for being on the show today, man.
Are you kidding, Ted? I'm absolutely honored. Thank you. I mean, I love the idea of reaching more and more men. And what you're doing with the Man Project, I think, is so cool. And I want to thank you, number one, for having me on and allowing me to share whatever it is I might have to share that may benefit others, but also for reaching men in this way, for helping to empower their lives. I think there's a lot of guys out there that are either struggling or just feeling a little lost or a little confused right now, just kind of need some direction. And, you know, they need to mix it up with a little other testosterone out there. So thank you, Chet. My pleasure, man.
All right. Well, it's good to have you. And Tom, you're a former Mr. America best-selling author, an international speaker. You train celebrities like Cindy Crawford, Eddie Murphy, Howard Stern, huge names, and you've hosted TV shows, and just to name a few of your accomplishments. But I'd love to hear your story for the listeners who haven't heard it, because life didn't start out that way for you. You even joined a biker gang for a little while, which is pretty crazy, man. Could you talk about how you went from that guy who was kind of lost, like we were just talking about, and how you got to where you are now?
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. And in fact, it's so interesting, and this may relate to some of your listeners, and I know it relates to you, Ted, in terms of your own personal experience, is that I wasn't until a few years ago, and this is many, many years after winning the national championship, the Mr. America, competing in the Olympia, and among other accomplishments, like owning several large athletic club chains back in New York, and even before writing the best-selling book, Seven Rules of Achievement, I wasn't willing, or I didn't feel comfortable with sharing that part of the story, which is, you know, the whole outlaw biker thing. You know, my assumption was I need to keep that as secret as possible. I certainly wouldn't outright say I've got a doctorate degree, but I want, when people listen, to make that assumption that I've got a doctorate degree, as opposed to having an experience with an outlaw bike club in my distant past. So I wasn't really willing to share that. And it was only after I began to work with a gentleman named Harv Eker. And if you've ever heard of Harv, he has a great book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, has a great personal development company that certainly rivals Tony Robbins, although he recently sold it. And when I started working with Harv and started doing a lot of training from the stage, because he does a lot of personal growth development, wealth building, business building, training, leadership, things of that nature, and started doing some of that, Harv found out my story. I think it was over breakfast one time. There was a group of trainers, only about five of us in Harv, and we were talking, and he said, "Well, Tom, what's your story? What's your background?" And I shared it because I don't generally do that, but it was a small group and I trusted everyone, including Harv, and I did. And Harv said, you have to share that story from the stage. That's your earning the right. You came from that. You were able to overcome that. And I'll share it with you in just a moment. But it was after that, you know, when you get advice from someone like Harv Eker, who's a tremendous leader in the community out there, personal growth development for all, not just men. When you get that kind of advice, you follow it. And it certainly hasn't failed. So I owe him a debt of gratitude for opening my eyes to being able to say, hey, you know what? Be truthful. Be forthcoming with your story, with your experience, because had I not been, and again, I want you guys to relate this to your own lives as well. If you're not completely honest with who you are and where you come from, then you're not being honest in your life in general. And if you're trying to be a leader or stepping up into a leader or trying to maintain a leadership position, hiding things, having skeletons in your background, and I get it, not everything has to be shared, but you have to be forthright about it. You have to understand you can't hide from it, you can't run from it, because it will impact your ability to lead, if not on a conscious level, certainly on an unconscious level. And thinking that you have something to hide or something that wouldn't be appropriate to share, and maybe, again, not with the whole world, then it's going to impact how you feel about yourself and ultimately your ability to really step up and lead. So for me, and I know that's a long-winded way of saying, I really just started sharing the story only a few years ago as a result of that experience and that understanding. So with that said, I mean, yeah, and it's still interesting, Ted, because I still get this little giggle when I begin to share the story, because it seems so far removed from who I am today, that past experience. And, you know, it started in many respects really early on when I was young and had some challenges in terms of learning abilities and something simple like dyslexia and hyperactivity, which of course they treat with drugs today, you know, was something that went undiagnosed for many years, my twin brother and I. And as a result, we had challenges. And because of that, we began to rebel and lash out. And I did a lot of fighting. And for some reason, and I think it had something to do with an experience I had in New York City one time when I was, I guess I was about 8 or 9 years old. I was in the back of the station wagon back then. It was probably in the mid-60s or so. And we were driving from my grandmother's house, which was in Manhattan. And I remember it was a beautiful summer evening. Just the sun was just starting to go down. And I remember hearing this thunder. It was like this loud, crazy, like the loudest thunder I've ever heard. And I'm like glancing at the window. I rolled down the window. I'm looking out the window. I'm like, where's this coming from? All I'm doing is looking up because it's got to be coming from, you know, the sky. It's thunder, right? And all of a sudden, I looked down. And before I knew it, we were like, literally surrounded. It was like we were stopped at a light in our old beat up old Buick station wagon. And I look around and next thing you know, I mean, these Hell's Angels had pulled up to the light and it was probably 20 or 30 of them. And you know, the old Harleys back in those days made some noise. And you could imagine in between the buildings in Manhattan, 20 or 30 Harleys, boom, boom, all revving up. And man, I'm looking out the window and there's a guy on his bike next to me and he's got this big furry helmet on with these big horns, like buffalo horns coming out of his helmet. He's got a scar across his face, look like he would hit with an axe. And he glances over at me. It can't be more than a foot and a half away from the guy. And he gives me this big wink and then boom, 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 starts the engine and they roar off. And to me, in my mind, because I was struggling, you know, with this dyslexia and hyperactivity and not feeling like I fit in. I was fighting all the time and getting into trouble anyway. Man, that was power.
Yeah.
Something about that brotherhood, that being with other guys and the power of those motorcycles. Well, from that moment on, it was something I was a little confused about because my older brother was a police officer in Manhattan. I wanted to be a cop and then I wanted to be an outlaw biker. I didn't know what I was doing at that age. And then, unfortunately, one of the great epic events in my life was I got my first Harley Davidson illegally when I was in 10th grade in high school and began the process of rebuilding it and stripping it down, getting to know it, nut, bolt, and washer. And ultimately, by the time I was in 12th grade, I had already been out on that bike riding around Manhattan looking for guys to ride with because there's only one sound better than a Harley, and that is several Harleys together. And obviously, that had an impact. And of course, I met the wrong guys, you might say, and started hanging out. And of course, you know, here they got this guy, he's, you know, 17, 18 years old, young, he's easy to influence. And they sort of like saw somebody to show off for, you might say, and began to really relate to these guys and started riding with them more and more often. And this wasn't the Outlaw Bike Club I mentioned earlier, but it was a rival club of that club. And certainly at the time, one of the most notorious outlaw bike clubs in the country. And so I began to ride with them. Now, I never full patched. That means I never fully joined, because after 5 years of riding with these guys, something happens. I think within a couple of years or so, I began to realize that this is not really what I thought. It's not really. And, you know, guys that ride with some of these clubs may argue with me on this. They may even beat me down as a result of saying it. But it's not the brotherhood you'd think it is.
Right.
It's organized crime, and it's a very immoral lifestyle. And it wasn't something that really felt right to me along the way. So I became disillusioned with it within a couple of years or so. And then I was being forced. It's like at some point you either eat all in or you're out.
Yeah.
You either patch in or you get the freak out. That took about 5 years. And believe me, I stretched that to the limit in terms of what that tolerance was. And I was standing in the clubhouse one night, again, after vacillating for years over this. And I was standing in the clubhouse, which was really nothing more than a beat-up old warehouse in some warehouse district somewhere. And there was an old bar in there. I guess it was handmade. It was like plywood and some 2x4s held together with duct tape and a few screws. And I remember I was standing at that bar, and I was looking in the broken mirror across from the bar. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, man, this is what I'm becoming. This is who I am. I mean, gosh, I was no more than 23 years old at the time, and I looked like I was in my 30s, beat up, wrung out, probably hungover every single night after all the drugs and the alcohol and constant fighting. So these things were beginning to wear on me. When I looked in that mirror, I could see that, and it was that moment I heard a voice in my head that literally said, "That's it. You're done. Walk away." And I heard it again. You're done. Walk away. And, you know, we all have this little inner voice. We all have this little inner voice that either keeps us from taking action, warns us when we're in danger, or gets us to move forward, maybe to approach a woman or to take risk. But this wasn't that voice. I got to be honest with you. It wasn't that same little inner voice that I heard before, my own unconscious mind, you might say. But it was something higher. It was something bigger than that. And, you know, whether it was God or my guardian angel, I don't know to this day. I mean, I tend to have my beliefs. But one more time, it said, "You're done, walk away." And it was no way to ignore that voice. I couldn't turn back to the bar and do another shot. I had to listen. It was that powerful.
Wow.
And as I turned and walked away, because I had to follow through, maybe you've had these moments in your life where you make a decision. You decide one way or another, this is either enough, I'm done, I've had it. Or, you know what, I'm going to move towards this thing. I'm going to take action on this right now. And then you take a look back and you sort of like second think it just for a moment, which is exactly what I did. I thought twice as I'm headed for that door, almost putting my hand on the handle of the door. I looked back thinking, this is going to cost me. These are my brothers. This is my family for the most part right now. I'm leaving this behind. I wasn't just walking out for that night. I was walking out for good. That was it. Out of the lifestyle. Done. And as I did, as I turned back, something happened that absolutely solidified the fact that I made the right decision. Evidently, there was a double-barrel shotgun resting on the shelf behind the bar. And it was cocked, loaded, and ready to go just in case. Well, evidently, somebody had shoved against the bar and knocked it from its perch. And as it hit the ground, both barrels went off. And it blew a hole in the very spot that I'd been standing just moments before. Fortunately, no one had stepped into that spot. So there I was, and I looked back at that very spot, and boom, within a fraction of a second, the shotgun went off and blew a huge hole in the bar. The entire room filled with wood splinters and glass and shotgun shells, and you can imagine the whole place. I mean, the place erupted. I mean, guys are pulling their handguns out. There were other shotguns. I mean, nobody knew what had happened. And it was chaos. It was absolute chaos. And I was frozen, just absolutely frozen, thinking to myself, my God, if I hadn't walked away, I'd be dead right now. I'd be done. That'd be it. And wow. I opened up that door, and I walked out the door, and I never looked back. Now, there was a price to pay, without question. There was a price to pay, but I never looked back. And when that door closed, the door to a new life opened. And for me, that new life began in the gym, because the first thing I said to myself, well, where do I go from here? You know, I'd been doing a little teenage bodybuilding, and I said, let's get back in the gym. Let's start to rebuild the body first. That's number one. And then we can find the courage to do whatever it takes to break free of this permanently and move on. And so the new door opened, man.
Yeah, man, that is a wild story. That's a real life Sons of Anarchy story right there.
You're familiar with the show, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, I'm kind of more into the Vikings and some of the other shows, but I've watched Sons of Anarchy, and maybe I don't watch it because, man, I don't want to tempt myself with a bike. I have a little bit of a road rage problem already. Definitely don't need to be on a motorcycle right now.
No,
you know, Tom, something you said that I thought was so interesting and something I personally resonate with is you said, man, you know, I laugh when I talk about this story because I'm so far removed from it. And that's such a good point because that's how I feel from some of what I've been through in my life. And that's what's possible for anyone listening right now. And what I'd like to ask you is, what do you have to say for those guys listening who maybe they're not in an outlaw biker gang, maybe they haven't been through what I've been through, but maybe they're in a situation, maybe they're in a going through a divorce or already divorced and just really feeling down and out. Maybe they're in a job they hate. How is it that they need to think about what's possible in their life after being so low, hitting rock bottom?
Well, that's a great question, and a lot of it has to do with the psychology of achievement, which is we need to have an objective, we need to have a goal, we need to have something we're moving towards. If not, we're always in this state of either moving away from or being stuck. And this is what we mean by stuck. You know, if you're stuck in your life, in a job or relationship, or if your finances are stuck, it's primarily, my belief anyway, that it's because you haven't really set aside the time to map out some new objectives based on what you really want.
Yeah.
What is the lifestyle that you want? What do you want to be doing? If you had every weekend free or 3 or 4 days out of the week to do whatever you want, what would it look like? What would it be? If you were to build a business that would serve others and still support that lifestyle, what would it look like? Beginning to dream a little bit and thinking bigger. Now, I know this can be challenging for some people because we do put limits on ourselves. There's no question about it. We tend to not want to think too big or not want to dream too big. And I'm guilty of that myself. We're working on a project right now that is so much bigger in scope than anything we've ever done. I find myself up against obstacles that shouldn't really even exist. And most of them are just coming from my own mind, my own lack of belief in being able to do something this big, this epic. And yet it is possible. I know it's possible. With the right mindset, anything is possible. So if you're feeling stuck, or you're feeling frustrated, or you're feeling like you just, you know, every day is about thinking about what you don't want in your life, you need to get crystal clear on what you do want. That's number one. But the only way to avoid frustration after getting clear on what you want, because knowing what you want is sort of like a kid looking in the candy store through the glass, but the door is locked.
Yeah.
It's only frustrating. I want that candy. I'm dying for that candy. I gotta have that candy. But the door's locked. Door never opened. You can't get in. You just can't do it. So the only way to avoid that kind of frustration, once you really develop a plan or you develop at least some semblance of an idea of what it is that you want other than what you have now, is to take the first action step. You've got to do something. And listen, a big one would be to quit your job, to walk out on your relationship. It might be to clean out your cupboards, to join the gym, hire a personal trainer, any number of things, depending on what that objective is, what that goal is. You need to take some firm action because that then sends a message to your mind, this is possible. I can do it. I've got the inner strength. I've got the willpower. I know exactly what I'm moving towards now. You've programmed your mind by setting that goal and an objective to start moving towards it, something better, something bigger than what you're experiencing now. And now you've taken your first action. Of course, there's then the next action and the next, but that's all based on your plan. So if you're feeling stuck, man, for me, again, relating it back to my story, I knew I had to get back in the gym because I had to start rebuilding the body. I had to start creating some energy in my body and starting to feel better about myself and how I looked and felt. But it wasn't long after getting back into the gym that I started to cultivate the idea of really taking bodybuilding to a whole new level for me, not just being some guy that works out a little bit. And I remembered going back into the gym because it was the same gym. It was called Future Man, and it was in Amityville, Long Island. And it was a small little rundown kind of beat up gym. You know, back then this was the early 70s. Actually, this was the late 70s, early 80s. You know, gyms weren't what they are today for the most part. And this was a beat up old little gym, but it was also the gym that I had walked into when I was a teenager and saw a guy named Steve Mihalik, who who was Mr. America at the time. And I think he was even Mr. Universe. And he was just preparing. He was like in great shape. He had like within a couple of days, he was going to be competing in the Mr. Universe, one of the big contests. And he was doing a photo shoot, but he was in the process of training. And he had this beat up old wife beater on. It was raggedy. It was not like the new Nike clothes today. This was like a beat up old, it like had been sweated in 1,000 times and never washed. And he's like, dirty, beat up old sweatpants, and the guy was bronzed. And when I first saw him, I said, how is it possible that a human being could even look like this?
Yeah.
So I remembered back as I walked into that same gym. Here it was some 6 or 7 years later, after leaving the biker community, walked in, began to lift weights, and began to see that again in my mind. And it began, it was the seed that spawned into a very prosperous and rewarding bodybuilding career. But I knew what I wanted. I determined it. I'm going to become Mr. America. I want to be a national bodybuilding champion. That's the kind of mental thinking you have to have. You have to know what you're moving towards if you're feeling stuck. Otherwise, you're just going to remain stuck. That's the bottom line. Does that make sense, Ted?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was something like that that got me on track. And even when I was in my fitness career, which I think saved either my life or saved me from going to prison, one of the two. But I still was a little bit lost afterward. And it wasn't until I really like got clear, hey, I need better goals than just going to work and trying to get clients and trying to train people for 10 hours a day or 8 hours a day or whatever. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you said you got out of the gang when you were like 23 or so. And then it was a 7-year, 6-year time period until you went into this gym and saw the guy who was training for one of the big bodybuilding contests. What went on during that period that do you think kind of made you ready for something big in your life and going after the Mr. America title like you did?
Well, let me make it clear, because I wasn't really clear before. That 6 or 7 years that had passed was when I was a teenager, before I got that first Harley Davidson and wound up going down the wrong path. I had gone into that gym because we were training, we were working out. It was something that was like a staple. I mean, I loved working out. I remember, I guess I was probably in junior high school, the first time I saw the cover of Muscle Builder magazine, and Arnold was on the cover. Of course, we had no idea who Arnold was at the time, but you can imagine some 12, 13-year-old kid looking at a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger at his heyday, you know, on the cover of some magazine. Again, I was awestricken by that and started working out. And then this gym had opened up. It was probably about, you know, 5 miles from me. I had to ride over there on my bicycle. So when I walked in, that's when I saw Steve Mihalik. It was about 7 years before, let's just say, if you don't mind my using blunt language, before the shit hit the fan, that's when I saw Steve Mihalik. So when I rejoined that gym, when I got back into gym after being absent for all those years, that vision, that emotion was still tied. It was, let's call it anchored. It was anchored to that gym. So the moment I walked in there, I began to see those images. And when I looked in the mirror, I began to see myself looking that way, feeling that way, being that Mr. America. And so really it was only 5 years after leaving the biker community at the time. When I walked out that door, it was 5 years almost to the day that I won the National Bodybuilding Championship, the Mr. America.
Wow, awesome. So yeah, so when you walked back in, that's when you saw, you remembered that image from when you were a kid. Now I got you. Yeah, that is so cool, man. And you went on to be such a successful bodybuilder and win the Mr. America title. That's awesome. And you know, something that comes up a lot, I think you being in the fitness business too, you've probably seen this. You see guys who are really focused on working on their body and they look great, but they have other areas of their life that are a mess. Maybe they're broke. Maybe their relationships with women aren't so good, whatever it is, but they look great. And you've talked a lot about the mindset and how we need to know what we want to achieve. We need to go after it and take those actions. How do you look at health and fitness, and how do you, as a holistic approach to success, and how do you get people to embrace it without like maybe taking over their lives and preventing them from being the father or the husband or a good entrepreneur or good member of a corporation or, you know, with their careers and jobs and whatnot?
Great question. Very insightful question, because it happens to a lot of young bodybuilders. It
happened to me, man.
Yeah. And you could be the smart, I mean, you're an extremely smart guy and aware, but it can easily happen. And in many respects, it's what's supposed to happen when we program our mind correctly to move towards an objective, and you become single-minded in that pursuit. I mean, when you're shooting for the stars, man, you can't allow anything else, like having a family or a business or anything, interrupt that. There's only so much energy. There's almost so much mind power. There's almost so much that you can put into any one thing. And if it's all encompassing, that's how you're going to achieve an objective. But you're going to sacrifice some things along the way. And for me, it was interesting because none of the other things were sacrificed, because I really clumped them together, to be honest with you. I clumped together being an articulate individual. I knew that I could no longer use the same language patterns I used, you know, riding with my bros, yeah, my compadres in the club. You know, I mean, every other word was four-letter word, you know. You can't do that anymore. So I knew that, number one, I had to become much more articulate. Number two, I had to become educated. I had to get myself through. I went back to school and I started studying business, and I started to learn language, and I started to read more. So I tied, for me, becoming Mr. America. The image that I had in my mind of Mr. America wasn't just a physique, wasn't just a blob of clay, big muscles, shaped and just awesome in that respect. But in my mind, it was sort of like, I hate to use this example, but it was sort of like the Miss America. I had to be able to be articulate. I had to be able to communicate. I had to have good presence on stage, off stage. I had to be a good person. I had to be a likable person. I had to have good values. All of that. I had to be a good business person. I tied every single one of those things to becoming Mr. America. That if one of those pieces were missing in my mind, I wasn't going to be successful. I wasn't going to make it, period. And as a result of that, I believe, yeah, it wasn't like I took the focus off. You know, the focus was always on becoming Mr. America, becoming a national bodybuilding champion, and ultimately turning pro and competing in the Olympia. But because it encompassed all those things, it never felt like I was sacrificing any one thing. I will say this. I take that back a little bit, because my first relationship back in those days, my first real relationship, I sacrificed that relationship because the bodybuilding, including all those other pieces I talked about, the business and articulation, stage presence, good person, it became like a mistress in many respects. And having the energy to really focus on a relationship was more than it could bear for the most part. And I think at some point, unlike all those other aspects, I think I didn't value relationship as much as I should have. And therefore, it was one of the things I was willing to sacrifice. I wasn't willing to sacrifice the other things. So in terms of relaying this message to everyone else out there, anyone else who might feel like, hey, you know what, I'm pursuing something, if it's whether it's bodybuilding or business or something else, you need to tie in all other areas of your life to make sure that you've got balance in that respect, and that all becomes part of it. Your physiology, by the way, if you're in business or you're an entrepreneur and you're not paying close attention to maximizing your physical energy by working out, exercising on a regular basis, by eating healthy, drinking lots of water, getting plenty of rest, mitigating stress as much as possible, then guess what? You are simply not going to be the business entrepreneur you could be. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's going to be 10% less, 20% less, 50% less. It all depends on what kind of shape your physiology and your energy level is in. But you're not going to be the best you can be, period. That's it. It's the bottom line. And I don't care. And you can cite, hey, this Jack Welch was a big fitness guy and he was a tremendous CEO. I get it. But you know what? He could have been an even more tremendous CEO had he been more fit. You know, I mean, it's absolutely factual. So tie what you're doing into all these other aspects of your life so that you maintain that balance. Because ultimately, the thing that can take you down, man, like the lion with the thorn in his paw, that's the thing that weakens him. That's the thing that will take down that lion. And you never know where it's going to come from, because it'll blindside you in a heartbeat if you're not paying attention to your relationship, if you're not paying attention to being a father, if you're not paying attention to your business, or you're paying too much attention to your body or not enough of those things. The things that you neglect will be the ones that blindside you, man.
Yeah, no, thanks for saying that. It's so important. And absolutely, you may not be a bad CEO or husband or whatever, but you are not going to be at your best. And we all deserve to know what it's like to be at our best. And it only comes through taking care of your body. Well said, Tom. You know, something else you mentioned, actually, I've heard you talk about it before, and it's something that I see all the time and something that I know I used to suffer from personally, and that's limiting beliefs. And it's kind of a weird thing because you talk to people and you see it and you're like, oh, that's what it is. This guy doesn't see the opportunities that are around us all the time. And could you talk about what limiting beliefs are and how to be more aware of whether we have them or not?
God, another great question, man, because this goes right to the heart of what my experience was and certainly what yours is as well, Ted. And for so many of us, we all have limiting beliefs to one degree or another. And it could be in your relationships. It could be in your finances. It could certainly be in your body, any number of things, your ability to really take the leadership role. Think about how powerful your beliefs are in terms of your actions. You know, we really, for the most part, unless we're compromising those beliefs, our beliefs become, in many respects, our values. It's what we believe in. If you believe in God, for example, as I do, it becomes a value to you. You wouldn't want to do something that compromises that value, or you feel like you're out of integrity if you do. But limiting beliefs that are really deeply rooted in the unconscious cells of our body and our mind are the ones, limiting. What is limiting? Limiting is not allowing you or throwing false obstacles in the way of allowing you to achieve what it is that you've determined you want to achieve. Or, even worse, setting objectives for things that you could achieve but don't really believe you could. I can't even tell you how many times I've coached individuals that had incredible, extraordinary potential but didn't want to push their goal setting or their strategies or their objectives too far. And listen, I've gone through this myself because they had some limiting belief around whether or not they could really achieve that. And if they didn't believe they could achieve it, they didn't want to pursue it.
Sure.
So limiting beliefs are something that take hold usually early on in life. I'll give you an example real quick from my own experience. For me, my twin brother and I struggled early on with what they diagnosed, of course, was the school system, the educational system, diagnosed as learning disabled. And that learning disabled simply because we were dyslexic, which means you see things backwards, letters are out of order, numbers are not in the right place, and your brain just kind of has things scrambled a little bit, you know? So as a result of that, they decided the best thing for us would be to be placed into a special ed class. Now, the special ed class at that time really truly did, for the most part, have a lot of truly challenged young individuals in there. People that really truly had disabilities, you know, Down syndrome, you name it. So for my brother and I to be put into special ed classes in fourth grade, what happened was, of course, other fourth graders, which are not terribly kind to their fellow students, began to call me retard and, you know, shun me and stupid. And as a result of that, you begin to believe you're not as good as. You begin to believe you're stupid. You're not the same. You're an outcast. So for me, I began to believe those things, which I also believe was at the root of my wanting to be an outlaw biker, because those guys or the one percenters, as they call themselves. The one percenters are 1% of 1% of 1% of society. They're the outcasts. They're different. You know, whether or not society sees them as good enough or not doesn't matter. They're different than everyone else. And I felt that way in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. And I developed a belief around that, that number one, I'm different than everyone else. Number two, I'm not good enough. Number three, I'm stupid, and I'll never really amount to anything. And all of that was just based on stuff that I heard and my circumstances. So as a result, when you hear that enough and you're in the right circumstances and there's enough emotion tied to it simultaneously, that's how a belief begins. It gets into the cells of your body and it becomes embedded in those cells, including your brain. Remember, your body, and I should bring this up, is that your body is your unconscious mind as much as parts of your brain is. So it's in the cells of your body. You feel it. It's emotional. And there are certain words and certain phrases and certain circumstances, for example, that still trigger that part of me that challenges it, that makes, that pushes the button, you might say, even though I'm aware of it, it still pushes those buttons. So for me, the belief was, I'm not good enough, I'll never amount to anything, I'm stupid. It really challenged me along the way. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to move towards that outlaw bike thing, not only the brotherhood, is because, you know what, that's where I belong. I was in a special ed class, and this is the special ed class of adults. So why not, right? This is where I belong. I didn't feel like I had to step up. I didn't feel like I had to be successful. All I needed to be is a badass, and I was a badass. So it worked for me. It was perfect. And it was all based on this limiting belief. And it wasn't until that one day, and sometimes, you know, we could become aware of these beliefs as a result of just having enough. Somebody else might have a limiting belief that is, hey, you know what? Based on relationship challenges they saw their parents have, just struggles they saw, you know, and hey, and maybe here's a really powerful disempowering link that a lot of people make. I know a couple of guys that are even coaching clients of mine that are serial monogamists, meaning they have one girlfriend at a time, anywhere between 6 months and a year, and then they move on. And it's not because they don't like this person, it's not because they're not good people, but it's like, oh, I'm getting a little too close to actually feeling what love is. And I believe unconsciously that love equals pain and heartache, because that's what I saw my parents go through. So they created this belief around love and to avoid love at all costs. So when they start to feel that deeper sense of love and connection with this person, they start to back off. They start to remove themselves emotionally from the situation until ultimately the relationship ends. And now they don't have to worry about ever experiencing the or even anticipating the pain of falling in love. So again, that's a deep rooted core belief, you might say. And so becoming aware of it is just simply looking at your patterns. Looking at, what do I do every time, for example, I try to start a new business, something happens, something gets in the way, something stops me. Well, you can say that is something externally, which makes you nothing more than a victim of circumstances. Or you can say, you know what? This is a pattern. I've tried to start a business three times. Three times I've been sabotaged or gotten derailed. Now I need to start looking at what's going on a deep unconscious level. Maybe I'm afraid of starting a business. Maybe I have a fear of failure, or maybe I have a fear of even succeeding at this thing, or not being able to live up to my own expectations or my wife or my husband's expectations of this. So what might be the belief around that? So really identifying those core beliefs, and there's other ways of doing this, of course, but on a simple superficial level is identifying patterns that are disempowering for you. If the pattern is disempowering, and pattern is that every time I go to the gym, I get a phone call. Every time I go to the gym and I try to work out, I get interrupted. Maybe you're afraid to really commit to the workouts. You join the gym. That's a nice step. You feel better about it. But maybe there's a core belief that's keeping you from really engaging your physiology to be fit. Maybe there's some negative core beliefs around being fit and being active. I don't know. I had one client, for example, who every time he really started to get in shape, he would stop. He'd either quit, or he'd back out, or he'd find excuses, or he'd get injured. And here's the interesting thing. As we began to look at this and evaluate what was going on in this respect, we unrooted an interesting root cause to this belief he had, which was, I'm not an athlete. And working out, really getting in great shape, would mean I'm an athlete. But I'm not an athlete, so I can't do that. The reason he doesn't want to be an athlete, the reason he believes he would never be an athlete, is because he was an academic when he was younger, and the jocks picked on him. The athletes picked on him, and he hated athletes. He hated jocks. And when you hate something, if you hate people that have money, if you hate people that have great relationships, if you hate people that have great bodies, whatever it might be, it's very unlikely that you ever achieve any of those things, because the core belief is, I'm not that. I'm not a bad person. I'm not a creep. I'm not a stinker. I'm not a bully. And jocks and athletes are bullies and creeps, and I'll never be that. So that was the core belief that actually held him back from really getting in good shape. Does that make sense?
Yeah, man, that's so insightful. And I hope if you're listening to this, you're taking this to heart and starting to think about what your limiting beliefs are, because we all have them, and starting to evaluate where you're going wrong, where your beliefs are not matching up with the opportunities that you have today, meaning if you do the right things exercise-wise and nutrition-wise, you get into better shape. You know, it's funny, Tom, I have a coaching client, and this is a perfect segue to talk about what you're doing now because you're doing something really cool. I have a coaching client who is shifting gears. He's getting out of being an attorney and he's getting into the fitness business, and I'm helping him do that. And he believes he can do it, so he's fine. But he's surrounded by these people who are like, you paid all this money to go to law school. What are you doing? You're throwing away your career. You're doing all this stuff. You should stick it out. Find something law that, and he's like, no, you're not listening. I hate it. I'm going to go do something that I love. And it's these other people that are kind of, he's having to kind of back them off and not let what they say get into his head so he can focus on what he really is truly passionate about. And this guy, he's going to be so successful in fitness. He's on such a great track. And what I'm getting at here is being around a group of people who are all working together and don't have any of that bullshit that they're trying to shove down other people's throats is so important. And you have a group. Can you talk about what the name of the group is and what it's about?
Sure, absolutely. But you really hit on some things, and I really appreciate your synopsis and really tying it into what everyone else's experience might be in terms of that limiting belief aspect of it. Because sometimes, you know, and this is going to be interesting, but it is something to definitely be aware of. A lot of times what happens is we have a limiting belief, but sometimes we can break free of that limiting belief. We can, and not even sometimes, quite often we can. If we make a determination, you know what, I'm no longer going to believe this. It's not empowering me. It's holding me back. I'm done. You know, I had to let go of that belief that I was stupid. I had to let go of that belief that I was one of the one percenters and actually become part of society and a contributing part of society when I left that biker community. I had to let go of that belief. If that belief still had its grip on me, there's no way. I could have broke loose for a short period of time, but I would have went back without a doubt. So here's the thing to be aware of, too, is that a lot of times our limiting beliefs are reflected by the people that we surround ourselves with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this is all done unconsciously, by the way. We will seek out and find people who ultimately will hold us back to the level of our own expectations. So for this gentleman, hey, you know, I get it. It doesn't make sense to leave, you know, after you studied for 8+ years to become an attorney and you have the potential of making all this money to get into the fitness industry. It just doesn't make sense for most people because most people are limited in their thinking. They don't think in terms of passion and energy and purpose and what you love to do. And those are the things that keep men, women, entrepreneurs feeling empowered, man. Not doing something because you went to school for it and making a lot of money. That doesn't empower people, but most people don't think that way. And we can wind up surrounding ourselves with people that will hold us back, even if our own limiting beliefs are starting to crack. We're starting to have some doubts around those things. Don't worry. There's plenty of people around you to reinforce that old belief. So be aware of that. Be cautious of it, obviously. Take whatever advice they're giving, you know, with a grain of salt, and then take whatever action you need to take. So, but you did ask me what we're doing. I'm really excited, actually, about our next project because, you know, having worked in the coaching industry and the fitness industry for so many years and having created some really great relationships. I created a great relationship with a master business coach called Travis Greenlee. He's up in Evergreen, Colorado, and a great guy. And we're launching something we believe is going to be so powerful for men. And the avatar that we really feel we can serve are men, entrepreneurs between 45 and 65, who are going through the struggle of their second half, you might say. And I'm almost reluctant to say that because I don't know about anybody else out there, but I'm living to 115. At 56, I'm not quite into that yet. I'm a little past the second half, you might say, or getting close to it.
You're 56, Tom?
Yeah, 56, man. Just
Whoa.
Turned. Yeah.
Dude, you look awesome. We were using the video before we hopped on. Dude, you look great, man. I've seen your workout videos on your Facebook. That's awesome, man. I thought you were like 40-something.
Ah, I appreciate it, man. But you could have said 30. For God's sake, man. Come on.
I know. I thought you were like 28, man. I thought, hey, you know, you were still getting carded at bars and shit.
Well, thank you, man. But we really, part of it is based on my personal experience and certainly on Travis's experience as well, because he's in his late 40s, is that we really feel we can serve men on multiple levels who are entrepreneurs, who are in that age bracket, who are either struggling or beginning to feel the itch of the second half. And, you know, classically, we call it male menopause or your midlife crisis. And a lot of that is simply based on, you know what, the same sense of purpose we had 20 years ago and maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago that sparked us to start a business, become entrepreneurs, or do whatever it is that we're doing may not still be serving us in terms of that sense of purpose and those objectives. We're also feeling like, hey, you know what? We're starting to be overlooked by technology is passing us by, and there's a whole younger set that understands it. There's this whole CrossFit training world out there of bearded young 20 and 30 year olds that are making an impact, that are just getting started, that are passionate about their adventure. And I'm on the backslide. I'm starting to feel like I need to slow down. And the only reason we feel like we need to slow down is, again, and we go back to, it's a perfect tie into limiting beliefs. We've been conditioned as men to think we're supposed to start slowing down now. That by 65, we should be thinking about laying back or playing golf, drinking scotch with our buddies, and that's it. And then resting on our laurels or suffering as a result of not accomplishing what we thought we could have accomplished or should have accomplished years and years before, and simply living life at that point of kicking back. And it's not what we want. It's not what we need. So as men, we need to re-embrace our masculinity, man. We need to re-embrace the entrepreneurial spirit, find a new sense of purpose, find a new adventure, find that we can rescue the beauty like the hero does, whether it's our wives, our girlfriends, or someone new, and get back into the battle, because that's what we need as men. And what's required are new skills, new objectives. What's required are understanding technology. And more than anything, what's required is us stepping up in terms of our physiology, expanding on our energy, finding that spiritual support that's going to provide the emotional energy, the spiritual energy, finding the physical support through exercise, nutrition, the proper sleep, mitigating stress to help give us the energy we need when we sometimes feel like, oh my God, I'm getting old, I'm getting tired. No, you're not getting old and not getting tired. You've just been abusing your body or neglecting it for too long. You can get away with it when you're 20 or 30, but you can't get away with it anymore and expect it to be able to achieve what it is that you want. So the Epic Men Mastermind that we're putting together, and it's just about there. You can go to epicmen.com if you'd like to learn a little bit more about it. You can't sign up yet. It won't be for another month or so. But if you're one of those guys out there that need that support of a tribe, finding other guys, like-minded guys that are also, hey, either struggling or facing this second half and want to create something epic with that second half instead of just throwing it away because we're supposed to, that's BS, then we're bringing together the physiology, we're bringing the business and the technology all together in a one-year mastermind. It is a full-year commitment, man. But a commitment is what's going to be needed to really get to that next level in your body, in your relationship, in your business, and everything, and really start to create that epic second half. So we're really excited about this, Ted. And you know what? I was also excited to chat with you and talk with you because of what you're doing with the Men Project and in the fitness industry and how you're serving others as well. Because I think you've got a great little mastermind going as well, man. And you're a great leader. And like I said, I really appreciate what you're doing. And perhaps we can find a way to persuade you to join our mastermind. By the way, I've been a member of multiple masterminds. You learn something from everyone, man. There's no question about it. So thank you for the opportunity to share that, buddy.
Oh, thank you for coming on, Tom. I really appreciate it. And I just met you, but other people told me to reach out to you, and you're so inspiring. I read your blog. I watched several videos of you. I mean, you're just such an inspiring guy. Not only that, but you really have like your message down, and it's so important no matter whether we're an entrepreneur or just trying to talk to our family or our boss or our employees, that we really communicate well. And you're such an articulate master of communication. And it was just a pleasure speaking with you and listening to you. And man, I'll be honest, man, I wasn't in a good mood today. And I kind of told you that beforehand, but I really wanted to do this. I was psyched to have you on, and I'm all pumped up now. And I really appreciate having you on. And Tom, you dropped some serious knowledge. You shed light on so many things that hold people back from success in life. But there's going to be a lot of guys who listen to this, be like, wow, that was cool. That was so inspiring. That was awesome. And then they turn it off. Then they go back to their lives and they don't do anything different. For that guy, what is the one thing that you want him to do now to make a difference in his life?
That's simple. Go to epicmen.com.
I can't argue with that.
Outside of that, I mean, the moment this message is over, the moment you stop listening, what I want you to do is I want you to take out a piece of paper, forget about getting something you need, forget about going to the bathroom, forget about anything else that you think has to be done right now. Because the most important thing you can do right now is to write down. Listen, you have an idea. You have a semblance of an idea what needs to change in your life in order to start moving in a positive direction, a better direction, a more empowering direction. Or maybe you had some insights in terms of what that limiting belief is for you. Write it down and write down one empowering action step that you can take, not tomorrow, not later tonight, but almost immediately, picking up a book, changing your diet, committing to stopping coffee, committing to abusing your wife, whatever it might be, is an immediate action. I'm not going to commit to stop abusing my wife, by the way. but commit to something and write it down. Take out a pen and a piece of paper and do it right now. Write down one action step you can take. You've got to create momentum. Momentum is extraordinarily powerful. Even when pushing that giant boulder up the hill, you can do it once you get momentum going. But if you don't, that ball is just going to crush you, man. It's going to continue to crush you and keep you stuck where you are. Do it. Write something down right now, some action step you can take immediately or a commitment you can make immediately, then follow through on it.
Wow, powerful stuff. Tom Terwilliger, thank you so much for coming on today. And if you're listening to this, make sure you follow Tom's advice. Go do something right now. Go write down a limiting belief and write down either a commitment or an action you can take right after you are done writing it down, and then go do it. So that it's simple, but it's powerful. And man, just listening to that, that's what has gotten me through some times where I wasn't where I wanted. I was taking action, and the action makes you happier. So Tom, thank you so much for that. Go to epicmen.com. Tom resonates with you. If his message resonates with you, he's a badass dude who can help you take your life to the next level. If you're one of those people who are really struggling, trying to make meaning in that second half of your life. So Tom, thank you so much for being here today. You pump me up, and I know you pump everybody else who listens to this interview. So thank you, man.
Well, thank you, Ted. Again, I appreciate you. I appreciate your story, what you're doing, what you've overcome, and your ability to bounce back, get off that mat, and just get moving forward. And not just doing it for you, but doing it to support others. And when I say support others, that includes me and everyone on this call. So thank you, my friend, for your commitment and for following through on it, man. You're awesome, brother.
Oh, thanks, bro. It was a pleasure having you.
You've reached the end of another episode of The Man Project. Connect with us at manprojectpodcast.com. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free tools. See you next episode.